I didn't like that, but I know now. He hesitated, and when he spoke again, his voice was softer. There wasn't another colored family for miles around. Now there ain't a colored man on this ranch, and there's just one family in Soledad. He laughed. If I say something, why, it's just a nigger saying it. Lenny asked, how long you think it'll be before them pups will be old enough to pet? Crooks laughed again. A guy can talk to you and be sure you won't go blabbing. Couple of weeks and them pups will be all right. George knows what he's about. Just talks, and you don't understand nothing. He leaned forward excitedly. This is just nigger talking. A busted back nigger, so it don't mean nothing, see? You couldn't remember it anyways. I seen it over and over, guy talking to another guy. It don't make no difference if you don't hear or understand. Thing is, they're talking. Well, they're sitting still not talking. Don't make no difference. No difference. His excitement had increased until he pounded his knee with his hand. George can tell you screwy things, and it don't matter. It's just the talking. It's just being with another guy, that's all. He paused. His voice grew soft and persuasive. Suppose George don't come back no more. Suppose he took powder and just ain't coming back. What'll you do then? Lenny's attention came gradually to what had been said.
What?
He demanded. I said, suppose George went into town tonight, and you never heard of him no more. Crooks pressed forward some kind of private victory. Just suppose that, he repeated.
He won't do it, then he cried. George wouldn't do nothing like that. I've been with George a long time. He'll come back tonight.
But the doubt was too much for him.
Don't you think he will?
Crooks' face lighted with pleasure in his torture.
Nobody can't tell what a guy'll do,
he observed calmly.
Let's say he wants to come back and he can't. Suppose he gets killed or hurt and he can't come back.
Lenny struggled to understand.
George won't do nothing like that, he repeated. George is careful. He won't get hurt. He ain't never been hurt 'cause he's careful.
Well, suppose he don't come back. What'll you do then?
Lenny's face wrinkled with apprehension.
I don't know. Say, what you doing anyways?
He cried.
This ain't true. George ain't got hurt.
Crooks bored in on him. Want me to tell you what'll happen?
They'll take you to the booby hatch. They'll tie you up with a collar like a dog.
Suddenly Lenny's eyes centered and grew quiet and mad. He stood up and walked dangerously toward Crooks.
Who hurt George?
He demanded. Crooks saw the danger as it approached him. He edged back on his bunk to get out of the way.
I was just supposing, he said. George ain't hurt. He's all right. He'll be back all right.
Lenny stood over him.
What are you supposing for? Ain't nobody gonna suppose no hurt to George.
Crooks removed his glasses and wiped his eyes with his fingers.
Just sit down, he said. George ain't hurt.
Lenny growled back to his seat on the nail keg.
Ain't nobody gonna talk no hurt to George, he grumbled.
Crooks said gently,
maybe you can see now. You got George. You know he's going to come back. Suppose you didn't have nobody. Suppose you couldn't go into the bunkhouse and play rummy because you was black. How'd you like that? Suppose you had to sit out here and read books. Sure, you could play horseshoes till it got dark, but then you got to read books. Books ain't no good. A guy needs somebody to be near him,
he whined.
A guy goes nuts if he ain't got nobody. Don't make no difference who the guy is, long as he's with you. I tell you, he cried, a guy gets too lonely, and he gets sick. George gonna come back,
Lenny reassured himself in a frightened voice.
Maybe George come back already. Maybe I better go see, Crooks said. I didn't mean to scare you. He'll come back. I was talking about myself. Guy sits alone out here at night, maybe reading books or thinking or stuff like that. Sometimes he gets thinking, you got nothing to tell him what's so and what ain't so. Maybe if he sees something, he don't know whether it's right or not. He can't turn to some other guy and ask him if he sees it too. He can't tell. You got nothing to measure by. I seen things out here. I wasn't drunk. I don't know if I was asleep. If some guy was with me, he could tell me I was asleep and then it would be all right. But I just don't know. Crooks was looking across the room now, looking toward the window. Lenny said miserably, George won't go away and bleed me. I know George wouldn't do that. The stable buck went on dreamily. I remember when I was a little kid on my old man's chicken ranch. Had two brothers. They was always near me, always there. Used to sleep right in the same room. Right in the same bed. All three. Had a strawberry patch. Had an alfalfa patch. Used to turn the chickens out in the alfalfa on a sunny morning. My brothers would sit on a fence rail and watch 'em. White chickens they was. Gradually, Lenny's interest came around to what was being said.
George says we're going to have alfalfa for the rabbits.
What rabbits?
We're going to have rabbits and a berry patch.
You're nuts.
We are, too. You can ask George.
You're nuts. Crooks was scornful. I seen hundreds of men come by on the road, on the ranches, with their bindles on their backs, same damn thing in their heads. Hundreds of them. They come and they quit and go, and every damn one of them got a little piece of land in his head. Never a goddamn one of them ever gets it. Just like heaven. Everybody wants a little piece of land. I read plenty of books out here. Nobody never gets to heaven, and nobody gets no land. Just in the head. They're all the time talking about it, but it's just in the head.
He paused and looked toward the open door, for the horses were moving restlessly and the halter chains clinked. A horse whinnied.
I guess somebody out there, Crooks said. Maybe Slim. Slim comes in sometimes 2-3 times a night. Slim's a real skinner. He looks out for his team.
He pulled himself painfully upright and moved toward the door.
That you, Slim?
He called. Candy's voice answered.
Slim went in town. Say, you seen Lenny?
You mean the big guy?
Yeah, you seen him around any place?
He's in here, Crooks said shortly.
He went back to his bunk and lay down. Candy stood in the doorway, scratching his bald wrist and looking blindly into the lighted room. He made no attempt to enter.
Tell you what, Lenny, I've been figuring out about them rabbits.
Crooks said irritably.
You can come in if you want.
Candy seemed embarrassed.
I don't know. Of course, if you want me to.
Come on in. If everybody's coming in, you might just as well.
It was difficult for Crooks to conceal his pleasure with anger. Candy came in, but he was still embarrassed.
Got a nice, cozy little place in here,
he said to Crooks.
Might be nice to have a room all to yourself this way.
Sure, said Crooks. And a manure pile out under the window. Sure, it's swell.
Lenny broke in.
You said about the rabbits?
Candy leaned against the wall beside the broken collar while he scratched his wrist stump.
I've been here a long time, he said. And Crook's been here a long time. This is the first time I ever been in his room.
Crook said darkly.
Guys don't come into a colored man's room very much. Nobody been in here but Slim. Slim and the boss.
Candy quickly changed the subject.
Slim's as good a skinner as I've ever seen.
Lenny leaned toward the old swamper.
About them rabbits?
He insisted. Candy smiled.
I got it figured out. We can make some money on them rabbits if we go about it right.
But I get to tend them,
Lenny broke in.
George says I get to tend them. He promised.
Crooks interrupted brutally.
You guys are just kidding yourself. You'll talk about it a hell of a lot, but you won't get no land. You'll be a swamper here till they take you out in a box.
Yeah, I've seen too many guys. Lenny here quit and be on the road in 2-3 weeks. Seems like every guy got land in his head.
Candy rubbed his cheek angrily.
You're goddamn right we're gonna do it. George says we are. We got the money right now.
Yeah, said Crooks. And where's George now? In town, in a whole house. That's where your money's going. Jesus, I've seen it happen too many times. I've seen too many guys with land in their head. They never get none under their hand.
Candy cried.
Sure they all want it. Everybody wants a little bit of land, not much, just something that was his. Something he could live on, and there couldn't be nobody throw him off it. I never had none. I planted crops for damn near everybody in this state, but they wasn't my crops. And when I harvested them, it wasn't none of my harvest. But we're gonna do it now. And don't make no mistake about that. George ain't got the money in town. The money's in the bank. Me and Lenny and George, we're gonna have a room to ourselves. We're gonna have a dog. And rabbits and chickens. We're gonna have green corn and maybe a cow or a goat.
He stopped, overwhelmed with his picture. Crooks asked,
You say you got the money?
Damn right. We got most of it, just a little bit more to get. Have it all in 1 month. George got the land all picked out, too.
Crooks reached around and explored his spine with his hand.
I never seen guys really do it, he said. I seen guys nearly crazy with loneliness for land. But every time a whorehouse or a blackjack game took what it takes.
He hesitated.
If you guys would want a hand to work for nothing, just his keep, why, I'd come and lend a hand. I ain't so crippled I can't work like a son of a bitch if I want to.
And you boys seen Curly?
They swung their heads toward the door. Looking in was Curly's wife. Her face was heavily made up. Her lips were slightly parted. She breathed strongly, as though she had been running.
Curly ain't been here,
Candy said sourly. She stood still in the doorway, smiling a little at them, rubbing the nails of one hand with the thumb and forefinger of the other, and her eyes traveled from one face to another.
They left all the weak ones here, she said finally. Think I don't know where they all went? Even Curly? I know where they all went.
Lenny watched her fascinated. But Candy and Crooks were scowling down away from her eyes. Candy said,
Then if you know, why you want to ask us where Curly's at?
She regarded them amusedly.
Funny thing, she said. If I catch any one man and he's alone, I get along fine with him. Just let two of the guys get together and you won't talk. Just nothing but mad.
She dropped her fingers and then put her hands on her hips.
Y'all scared of each other, that's what. Every one of you scared the rest is gonna get something on you.
After a pause, Crooks said,
Maybe you better go along to your house now. We don't want no trouble.
Well, I ain't giving you no trouble. Think I don't like to talk to somebody every once in a while? Think I like to stick in that house all the time?
Candy laid the stump of his wrist on his knee and rubbed it gently with his hand. He said accusingly,
You got a husband. You got no call fooling around with us guys causing trouble.
The girl flared up.
Sure I got a husband. You all seen him. Swell guy, ain't he? Spends all his time saying what he's gonna do to guys he don't like. He don't like nobody. Think I'm gonna stay in that 2x4 house and listen to how Curly's gonna lead with his left twice and then bring in the old right cross? 1-2, he says. Just the old 1-2 and he'll go down.
She paused and her face lost its sullenness and grew interested.
Say, what happened to Curly's hand?
There was an embarrassed silence. Candy stole a look at Lenny. Then he coughed.
Why, Curly, he got his hand caught in a machine, ma'am. Bust his hand.
She watched for a moment, and then she laughed.
Baloney! What you think you're selling me? Curly started something he didn't finish. Caught in a machine. Baloney! Well, he ain't give nobody the good old 1-2 since he got his hand bust. Who bust him?
Candy repeated sullenly.
Got his hand caught in a machine.
All right, she said contemptuously. All right, cover him up if you wanna. What do I care? You bindle bums think you're so damn good. What do you think I am, a kid? I tell you, I could have went with shows. Not just one, neither. And a guy told me he could put me in pictures.
She was breathless with indignation.
Saturday night. Everybody's out doing something. Everybody. And what am I doing? Standing here talking to a bunch of bindle stiffs. A nigger and a dum-dum and a lousy old sheep. I'm liking it because there ain't nobody else.
Lenny watched her, his mouth half open. Crooks had retired into the terrible protective dignity of the Negro, but a change came over old Candy. He stood up suddenly and knocked his nail keg over backward.
I had enough,
he said angrily.
You ain't wanted here. We told you you ain't. And I tell you, you got floozy ideas about what us guys amounts to. You ain't got sense enough in that chicken head to even see that we ain't stiffs. Suppose you get us canned. Suppose you do. You think we'll hit the highway and look for another lousy two-bit job like this. You don't know that we got our own ranch to go to, and our own house. We ain't got to stay here. We got a house and chickens and fruit trees and a place 100 times prettier than this. And we got friends. That's what we got. Maybe there was a time when we was scared of getting canned, but we ain't no more. We got our own land, and it's ours, and we can go to it.
Curly's wife laughed at him.
Baloney, she said. I seen too many you guys. If you had 2 bits in the world, well, you'd be getting 2 shots of corn with it and sucking the bottom of the glass. I know you guys.
Candy's face had grown redder and redder, but before she was done speaking, he had control of himself. He was the master of the situation.
I might have knew,
he said gently.
Maybe you just better go along and roll your hoop. We ain't got nothing to say to you at all. We know what we got, and we don't care whether you know it or not. So maybe you better just scatter along now, 'cause Curly maybe ain't gonna like his wife out in the barn with us bindle stiffs.
She looked from one face to another, and they were all closed against her, and she looked longest at Lenny until he dropped his eyes in embarrassment. Suddenly she said,
"Where you get them bruises on your face?"
Lenny looked up guiltily.
Who? Me?
Yeah, you.
Lenny looked to Candy for help, and then he looked at his lap again.
He got his hand caught in a machine,
he said. Curly's wife laughed.
Okay, machine. I'll talk to you later. I like machines.
Candy broke in.
You let this guy alone. Don't do no messing around with him. I'm going to tell George what you says. George won't have you messing around with Lenny.
Who's George?
She asked.
Little guy you come with?
Lenny smiled happily.
That's him, he said. That's the guy, and he's going to let me tend the rabbits.
Well, if that's all you want, I might get a couple of rabbits myself.
Crooks stood up from his bunk and faced her.
I had enough, he said coldly. You got no rights coming in a colored man's room. You got no rights messing around here at all. Now you just get out. And get out quick. If you don't, I'm going to ask the boss not to ever let you come in the bar no more.
She turned on him in scorn.
Listen, nigger,
she said.
You know what I can do to you if you open your trap?
Crooks stared hopelessly at her. And then he sat down on his bunk and drew into himself. She closed on him.
You know what I could do?
Crooks seemed to grow smaller, and he pressed himself against the wall.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, you keep your place in, nigger, I could get you strung up on a tree so easy it ain't even funny.
Crooks had reduced himself to nothing. There was no personality, no ego. Nothing to arouse either like or dislike. He said,
"Yes, ma'am."
And his voice was toneless. For a moment she stood over him as though waiting for him to move so that she could whip at him again. But Crooks sat perfectly still, his eyes averted, everything that might be hurt drawn in. She turned at last to the other two. Old Candy was watching her, fascinated.
"If you was to do that, we'd tell," he said quietly. "We'd tell about you framing Crooks."
"Tell and be damned," she cried. "Nobody'd listen to you, and you know it. Nobody'd listen to you."
Candy subsided.
"No,"
he agreed.
"Nobody'd listen to us."
Lenny whined.
"I wish George was here. I wish George was here."
Candy stepped over to him.
"Don't you worry none," he said. "I just heard the guys coming in. George will be in the bunkhouse right now, I bet."
He turned to Curly's wife.
"You better go home now,"
he said quietly.
"If you go right now, we won't tell Curly you was here."
She appraised him coolly.
"I ain't sure you heard nothing."
"Better not take no chances,"
he said.
"If you ain't sure, you better take the safe way."
She turned to Lenny.
"I'm glad you bust up Curly a little bit. He got it coming to him. Sometimes I'd like to bust him myself."
She slipped out the door and disappeared into the dark barn. And while she went through the barn, the halter chains rattled, and some horses snorted and stamped their feet. Crooks seemed to come slowly out of the layers of protection he had put on.
"Was that the truth, what you said about the guys coming back?"
he asked.
"Sure, I heard them."
"Well, I didn't hear nothing."
"The gate banged,"
Candy said, and he went on.
"Jesus Christ, Curly's wife can move quiet. I guess she had a lot of practice, though."
Crooks avoided the whole subject now.
"Maybe you guys better go," he said. "I ain't sure I want you in here no more. Colored man got to have some rights, even if you don't like him."
Candy said,
"That bitch didn't ought to have said that to you."
"It wasn't nothing," Crooks said dully. "You guys coming in and setting made me forget. What she says is true."
The horses snorted out in the barn and the chains rang, and a voice called. "Lenny? Lenny, you in the barn?"
"It's George,"
Lenny cried, and he answered.
"Here, George. I'm right in here."
In a second, George stood framed in the door, and he looked disapprovingly about. "What you doing in Crook's room? You hadn't ought to be in here." Crooks nodded.
"I told them, but they come in anyways."
"Well, why didn't you kick them out?"
"I didn't care much," said Crooks. "Lenny's a nice fella."
Now Candy aroused himself.
"Well, George, I've been figuring and figuring. I got it doped out how we can even make some money on them rabbits."
George scowled. "I thought I told you not to tell nobody about that." Candy was crestfallen.
"Didn't tell nobody but Crooks,"
George said. "Well, you guys get out of here. Jesus, seems like I can't go away for a minute." Candy and Lenny stood up and went toward the door. Crooks called.
"Candy?"
"Huh?"
"Remember what I said about hoeing and doing our jobs?"
"Yeah,"
said Candy.
"I remember."
"Well, just forget it," said Crooks. "I didn't mean it. Just fooling. I wouldn't want to go no place like that."
"Well, okay. If you feel like that. Night."
The three men went out the door. As they went through the barn, the horses snorted and the halter chains rattled. Crooks sat on his bunk and looked at the door for a moment. Then he reached for the liniment bottle. He pulled out his shirt in the back, poured a little liniment in his pink palm, and, reaching around, he fell slowly to rubbing his back. One end of the great barn was piled high with the new hay, and over the pile hung the four-taloned Jackson fork suspended from its pulley. The hay came down like a mountain slope to the other end of the barn, and there was a level place as yet unfilled with the new crop. At the sides, the feeding racks were visible, and between the slats, the heads of horses could be seen. It was Sunday afternoon. The resting horses nibbled the remaining wisps of hay, and they stamped their feet, and they bit the wood of the mangers and rattled the halter chains. The afternoon sun sliced in through the cracks of the barn walls and lay in bright lines on the hay. There was a buzz of flies in the air, the lazy afternoon humming. From outside came the clang of horseshoes on the playing peg and the shouts of men, playing, encouraging, jeering. But in the barn, it was quiet and humming and lazy and warm. Only Lenny was in the barn, and Lenny sat in the hay beside a packing case under a manger in the end of the barn that had not been filled with hay. Lenny sat in the hay and looked at a little dead puppy that lay in front of him. Lenny looked at it for a long time, and then he put out his huge hand and stroked it clear from one end to the other. And Lenny said softly to the puppy,
"Why do you got to get killed? You ain't so little as mice. I didn't bounce you hard."
He bent the pup's head up and looked in its face, and he said to it,
"Now maybe George ain't gonna let me tend no rabbits if he finds out you got killed."
He scooped a little hollow and laid the puppy in it and covered it over with hay, out of sight. But he continued to stare at the mound he had made. He said,
"This ain't no bad thing, like I got to go hide in the brush. Oh, no, this ain't. I'll tell George I found it dead."
He unburied the puppy and inspected it, and he stroked it from ears to tail. He went on sorrowfully,
"But he'll know. George always knows. He'll say, 'You done it. Don't try to put nothing over on me.' And he'll say, 'Now just for that, you don't get to tend no rabbits.'"
Suddenly his anger arose.
"God damn you,"
he cried.
"Why do you got to get killed? You ate so little as mice."
He picked up the pup and hurled it from him. He turned his back on it. He sat bent over his knees and he whispered,
"No, I won't get to tend the rabbits. No, he won't let me."
He rocked himself back and forth in his sorrow. From outside came the clang of horseshoes on the iron stake, and then a little chorus of cries. Lenny got up and brought the puppy back and laid it on the hay and sat down. He stroked the puppy again.
"You wasn't big enough,"
he said.
"They told me and told me you wasn't. I didn't know you'd get killed so easy."
He worked his fingers on the pup's limp ear.
"Maybe George won't care,"
he said.
"This here goddamn little son of a bitch wasn't nothing to George."
Curly's wife came around the end of the last stall. She came very quietly, so that Lenny did not see her. She wore her bright cotton dress and the mules with the red ostrich feathers. Her face was made up and the little sausage curls were all in place. She was quite near to him before Lenny looked up and saw her. In a panic, he shoveled hay over the puppy with his fingers. He looked sullenly up at her. She said,
"What you got there, sonny boy?"
Lenny glared at her.
"George says I ain't to have nothing to do with you. Talk to you or nothing."
She laughed.
"George giving you orders about everything?"
Lenny looked down at the hay.
"Says I can't tend no rabbits if I talk to you or anything,"
she said quietly.
"He's scared Curly'll get mad. Well, Curly got his arm in a sling, and if Curly gets tough, you can break his other hand. You didn't put nothing over on me about it getting caught in no machine."
But Lenny was not to be drawn.
"No, sir. I ain't gonna talk to you or nothing."
She knelt in the hay beside him.
"Listen," she said. "All the guys got a horseshoe tenement going on. It's only about 4 o'clock. None of them guys are going to leave that tenement. Why can't I talk to you? I never get to talk to nobody. I get awful lonely.
Lenny said, well, I ain't supposed to talk to you or nothing.
I get lonely, she said. You can talk to people, but I can't talk to nobody but Curly. Else he gets mad. How'd you like not to talk to anybody?
Lenny said, well, I ain't supposed to. George is scared I'll get in trouble.
She changed the subject.
What you got covered up there?
Then all of Lenny's woe came back on him.
Just my pup,
he said sadly.
Just my little pup.
And he swept the hay from on top of it.
Why, he's dead, she cried.
He was so little,
said Lenny.
I was just playing with him, and he made like he's going to bite me, and I made like I was going to smack him, and I'd done it, and then he was dead.
She consoled him.
Don't you worry, none. He was just a mutt. You can get another one easy. Whole country is full of mutts.
It ain't that so much,
Lenny explained miserably.
George ain't gonna let me tend no rabbits now.
Why don't he?
Well, he said if I done any more bad things, he ain't gonna let me tend the rabbits.
She moved closer to him, and she spoke soothingly.
Don't you worry about talking to me. Listen to the guys yell out there. They got $4 bet on that tenement. None of them ain't gonna leave till it's over.
If George sees me talking to you, he'll give me hell,
Lenny said cautiously.
He told me so.
Her face grew angry.
What's the matter with me?
She cried.
Ain't I got a right to talk to nobody? What do they think I am, anyways? You're a nice guy. I don't know why I can't talk to you. I ain't doing no harm to you.
Well, George says you'll get us in a mess.
Oh, nuts,
she said.
What kind of harm am I doing to you? Seems like they ain't none of them cares how I gotta live. I tell you, I ain't used to living like this. I could have made something of myself,
she said darkly.
Maybe I will yet.
And then her words tumbled out in a passion of communication, as though she hurried before her listener could be taken away.
I lived right in Salinas, she said. Come there when I was a kid. Well, a show come through, and I met one of the actors. He says I could go with that show. But my old lady wouldn't let me, she says, because I was only 15. But the guy says I could've. If I went, I wouldn't be living like this, you bet.
Lenny stroked the pup back and forth.
We're gonna have a little place and rabbits, he explained.
She went on with her story quickly before she could be interrupted.
Another time, I met a guy, and he was in pictures. Went out to the Riverside Dance Palace with him. He says he was going to put me in the movies. Says I was a natural. Soon as he got back to Hollywood, he was going to write to me about it.
She looked closely at Lenny to see whether she was impressing him.
I never got that letter,
she said.
I always thought my old lady stole it. Well, I wasn't going to stay no place where I couldn't get nowhere and make something of myself. Where they stole your letters. I asked her if she stole it, too. She says no. So, I married Curly. Met him out at the Riverside Dance Palace that same night.
She demanded.
You listening?
Me? Oh, sure.
Well, I ain't told this to nobody before. Maybe I oughtn't to. I don't like Curly. He ain't a nice fella.
And because she had confided in him, she moved closer to Lenny and sat beside him.
Could have been in the movies. Had nice clothes. All them nice clothes like they wear, and I could have sat in them big hotels and had pictures took of me. When they had them previews, I could have went to them and spoke on the radio, and it wouldn't have cost me a cent because I was in the picture. And all them nice clothes like they wear. Because this guy says I was a natural.
She looked up at Lenny, and she made a small grand gesture with her arm and hand to show that she could act. The fingers trailed after her leading wrist, and her little fingers stuck out grandly from the rest. Lenny sighed deeply. From outside came the clang of a horseshoe on metal, and then a chorus of cheers.
"Somebody made a ringer," said Curly's wife.
Now the light was lifting as the sun went down, and the sun streaks climbed up the wall and fell over the feeding racks and over the heads of the horses. Lenny said,
"Maybe if I took this pup out and throwed him away, George wouldn't never know, and then I could tend the rabbits without no trouble."
Curly's wife said angrily,
"Don't you think of nothing but rabbits?"
"We're gonna have a little place," Lenny explained patiently. "We're gonna have a house and a garden and a place for alfalfa, and that alfalfa is for the rabbits, and I take a sack and get it all full of alfalfa, and then I take it to the rabbits."
She asked,
"What makes you so nuts about rabbits?"
Lenny had to think carefully before he could come to a conclusion. He moved cautiously close to her until he was right against her.
"I like to pet nice things. Once, at a fair, I seen some of them long-haired rabbits, and they was nice, you bet. Sometimes I even pet mice, but not when I could get nothing better."
Curly's wife moved away from him a little.
"I think you're nuts," she said.
"No, I ain't," Lenny explained earnestly. "George says I ain't. I like to pet nice things with my fingers, soft things."
She was a little bit reassured.
"Well, who don't?"
she said.
"Everybody likes that. I like to feel silk and velvet. Do you like to feel velvet?"
Lenny chuckled with pleasure.
"You bet, by God," he cried happily. "And I had some, too. A lady gave me some, and that lady was my own Aunt Clara. She gave it right to me, about this big a piece, huh? I wish I had that velvet right now."
A frown came over his face.
"I lost it," he said. "I ain't seen it for a long time."
Curly's wife laughed at him.
"You're nuts,"
she said.
"But you're kind of nice fella. Just like a big baby. But a person can see kind of what you mean. When I'm doing my hair sometimes, I just sit and stroke it because it's so soft."
To show how she did it, she ran her fingers over the top of her head.
"Some people got kind of coarse hair,"
she said complacently.
"Take Curly. His hair's just like wire, but mine is soft and fine. Of course, I brush it a lot. That makes it fine. Here. Feel right here."
She took Lenny's hand and put it on her head.
"Feel right around there and see how soft it is."
Lenny's big fingers fell to stroking her hair.
"Don't you mess it up,"
she said.
Lenny said, "Oh, that's nice."
And he stroked harder.
"Oh, that's nice."
"Look out now, you'll mess it up."
And then she cried angrily.
"You stop it now, you'll mess it all up."
She jerked her head sideways, and Lenny's fingers closed on her hair and hung on.
"Let go,"
she cried.
"You let go."
Lenny was in a panic. His face was contorted. She screamed then, and Lenny's other hand closed over her mouth and nose.
"Please don't,"
he begged.
"Oh, please don't do that. George will be mad."
She struggled violently under his hands. Her feet battered on the hay, and she writhed to be free, and from under Lenny's hand came a muffled screaming. Lenny began to cry with fright.
"Oh, please don't do none of that," he begged. "George is gonna say I done a bad thing. He ain't gonna let me tend no rabbits."
He moved his hand a little, and her hoarse cry came out. Then Lenny grew angry.
"Now don't,"
he said.
"I don't want you to yell. You're gonna get me in trouble, just like George says you will. Now don't do that."
And she continued to struggle, and her eyes were wild with terror. He shook her then, and he was angry with her.
"Don't you go yelling,"
he said, and he shook her, and her body flopped like a fish, and then she was still. For Lenny had broken her neck. He looked down at her, and carefully he removed his hand from over her mouth, and she lay still.
"I don't want to hurt you," he said, "but George will be mad if you yell."
When she didn't answer nor move, he bent closely over her. He lifted her arm and let it drop. For a moment, he seemed bewildered, and then he whispered in fright,
"I done a bad thing. I'd done another bad thing.
He pawed up the hay until it partly covered her. From outside the barn came a cry of men and the double clang of shoes on metal. For the first time, Lenny became conscious of the outside. He crouched down in the hay and listened.
I'd done a real bad thing,
he said.
I shouldn't have did that. George will be mad, and he said, hide in the brush till he come. He's gonna be mad in the brush till he come. That's what he said.
Lenny went back and looked at the dead girl. The puppy lay close to her. Lenny picked it up.
I'll throw him away,
he said.
It's bad enough like it is.
He put the pup under his coat, and he crept to the barn wall and peered out between the cracks toward the horseshoe game. And then he crept around the end of the last manger and disappeared. The sun streaks were high on the wall by now, and the light was growing soft in the barn. Curly's wife lay on her back, and she was half covered with hay. It was very quiet in the barn, and the quiet of the afternoon was on the ranch. Even the clang of the pitched shoes, even the voices of the men in the game seemed to grow more quiet. The air in the barn was dusky in advance of the outside day. A pigeon flew in through the open hay door and circled and flew out again. Around the last stall came a shepherd bitch, lean and long with heavy hanging dugs. Halfway to the packing box where the puppies were, she caught the dead scent of Curly's wife, and the hair rose along her spine. She whimpered and cringed to the packing box and jumped in among the puppies. Curly's wife lay with a half-covering of yellow hay, and the meanness and the plannings and the discontent and the ache for attention were all gone from her face. She was very pretty and simple, and her face was sweet and young. Now her rouged cheeks and her reddened lips made her seem alive and sleeping very lightly. The curls, tiny little sausages, were spread on the hay behind her head, and her lips were parted. As it happens sometimes, a moment settled and hovered and remained for much more than a moment, and sound stopped and movement stopped for much, much more than a moment. Then gradually time awakened again and moved sluggishly on. The horses stamped on the other side of the feeding racks, and the halter chains clinked. Outside, the men's voices became louder and clearer. From around the end of the last stall, old Candy's voice came.
Lenny?
He called.
Oh, Lenny! You in here? I've been figuring some more. Tell you what we can do, Lenny.
Old Candy appeared around the end of the last stall.
Oh, Lenny!
He called again, and then he stopped, and his body stiffened. He rubbed his smooth wrist on his white stubble whiskers.
I didn't know you was here,
he said to Curly's wife. When she didn't answer, he stepped nearer.
You oughtn't to sleep out here,
he said disapprovingly. And then he was beside her, and...
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And he looked about helplessly, and he rubbed his beard. And then he jumped up and went quickly out of the barn. But the barn was alive now. The horses stamped and snorted, and they chewed the straw of their bedding, and they clashed the chains of their halters. In a moment, Candy came back, and George was with him. George said, "What was it you wanted to see me about?" Candy pointed at Curly's wife. George stared. "What's the matter with her?" he asked. He stepped closer, and then he echoed Candy's words.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And he was down on his knees beside her. He put his hand over her heart. And finally, when he stood up slowly and stiffly, his face was as hard and tight as wood, and his eyes were hard. Candy said,
What done it?
George looked coldly at him. Ain't you got any idea? He asked. And Candy was silent.
I should have knew, George said hopelessly. I guess maybe way back in my head I did.
Candy asked,
What we gonna do now, George? What are we going to do now?
George was a long time in answering. Guess we got to tell the guys. I guess we got to get him and lock him up. We can't let him get away while the poor bastards starve. And he tried to reassure himself. Maybe they'll lock him up and be nice to him. But Candy said excitedly,
"We ought to let him get away. You don't know that, Curly. Curly's going to want to get him lynched. Curly will get him killed."
George watched Candy's lips. "Yeah," he said at last. "That's right. Curly will. And the other guys will." And he looked back at Curly's wife. Now Candy spoke his greatest fear.
"You and me can get that little place, can't we, George? You and me can go there and live nice, can't we, George? Can't we?"
Before George answered, Candy dropped his head and looked down at the hay. He knew. George said softly, "I think I knowed it from the very first. I think I knowed we'd never do her. You used to like to hear about it so much, I got to thinking maybe we would."
"Then it's all off?"
Candy asked sulkily. George didn't answer his question. George said, "I'll work my month. I'll take my $50 and I'll stay all night in some lousy cat house. Or I'll sit in a pool room till everybody goes home. Then I'll come back and work another month. I'll have another $50 more." Candy said,
"He's such a nice fella. I didn't think he'd do nothing like this."
George still stared at Curly's wife. "Lenny never done it in meanness," he said. "All the time he done bad things. But he never done one of them mean." He straightened up and looked back at Candy. "Now listen. We gotta tell the guys. We got to bring him in, I guess. They ain't no way out. Maybe they won't hurt him," he said sharply. "I ain't gonna let him hurt Lenny. Now you listen. The guys might think I was in on it. I'm gonna go in the bunkhouse, then in a minute you come out and tell the guys about her. I'll come along and make like I never seen her. Will you do that? So the guys won't think I was in on it?" Candy said,
"Sure, George. Sure, I'll do that."
"Okay. Give me a couple minutes, then you come running out and tell like you just found her. I'm going now." George turned and went quickly out of the barn. Old Candy watched him go. He looked helplessly back at Curly's wife, and gradually his sorrow and his anger grew into words.
"You goddamn tramp,"
he said viciously.
"You done it, didn't you? I suppose you're glad. Everybody knowed you'd mess things up. You wasn't no good. You ain't no good now, you lousy tart."
He sniveled and his voice shook.
"I could have hoed in the garden and washed dishes for them guys."
He paused and then went on in a sing-song, and he repeated the old words.
"If they was a circus or a ball game, we would have went to her. Just said to hell with work and went to her. Never asked nobody say so. And they'd been a pig and chickens, and in the winter, a little fat stove. And the rain coming, and just us sitting there."
His eyes blinded with tears, and he turned and went weakly out of the barn. And he rubbed his bristly whiskers with his wrist stump. Outside, the noise of the game stopped. There was a rise of voices in question, a drum of running feet, and the men burst into the barn. Slim and Carlson and Young Witt and Curly, and Crooks keeping back out of attention range. Candy came in after them, and last of all came George. George had put on his blue denim coat and buttoned it, and his black hat was pulled down low over his eyes. The men raced around the last stall. Their eyes found Curly's wife in the gloom, and they stopped and stood still and looked. Then Slim went quietly over to her, and he felt her wrist. One lean finger touched her cheek, and then his hand went under her slightly twisted neck, and his fingers explored her neck. When he stood up, the men crowded near, and the spell was broken. Curly came suddenly to life.
"I know who done it," he cried. "That big son of a bitch done it. I know he done it. Why, everybody else was out there playing horseshoes."
He worked himself into a fury.
"I'm gonna get him. I'm going for my shotgun. I'll kill that big son of a bitch myself. I'll shoot him in the guts. Come on, you guys."
He ran furiously out of the barn. Carlson said, "I'll get my Luger." And he ran out too. Slim turned quietly to George. "I guess Lenny done it all right," he said. "Her neck's bust. Lenny could have did that." George didn't answer, but he nodded slowly. His hat was so far down on his forehead that his eyes were covered. Slim went on. "Maybe like that time in Weed you was telling about." Again, George nodded. Slim sighed. "Well, I guess we gotta get him. Where you think he might have went?" It seemed to take George some time to free his words. "He would have went south," he said. "We come from north, so he would have went south." "I guess we gotta get him," Slim repeated. George stepped close. "Couldn't we maybe bring him in and they'll lock him up? He's nuts, Slim. He never done this to be mean." Slim nodded. "We might," he said. "If we could keep Curly in, we might, but Curly's gonna want to shoot him. Curly's still mad about his hand. I suppose they lock him up and strap him down and put him in a cage. That ain't no good, George." "I know," said George. "I know." Carlson came running in. "That bastard stole my Luger," he shouted. "It ain't in my bag." Curly followed him, and Curly carried his shotgun in his good hand. Curly was cold now. "All right, you guys," he said. "Nigger's got a shotgun. You take it, Carlson. When you see him, don't give him no chance. Shoot for his guts. That'll double him over." Witt said excitedly, "I ain't got no gun." Curly said, "You go into Soledad, get a cop. You get Al Wilts. He's deputy sheriff. Let's go now." He turned suspiciously on George. "You coming with us, fella?"
"Yeah," said George. "I'll come, but listen, Curly, the poor bastard's nuts. Don't shoot him. He didn't know what he was doing."
"Don't shoot him," Curly cried. "He's got Carlson's Luger. Of course we'll shoot him."
George said weakly, "Maybe Carlson lost his gun." "I seen it this morning," said Carlson.
"No, it's been took."
Slim stood looking down at Curly's wife. He said,
"Curly, maybe you better stay here with your wife."
Curly's face reddened.
"I'm going," he said. "I'm gonna shoot the guts out of that big bastard myself. Even if I only got one hand, I'm gonna get him."
Slim turned to Candy. "You stay here with her then, Candy. The rest of us better get going." They moved away. George stopped a moment beside Candy, and they both looked down at the dead girl until Curly called.
"You, George! You stick with us so we don't think you had nothing to do with this."
George moved slowly after them, and his feet dragged heavily. And when they were gone, Candy squatted down in the hay and watched the face of Curly's wife.
"Poor bastard,"
he said softly. The sound of the men grew fainter. The barn was darkening gradually, and in their stalls the horses shifted their feet and rattled their halter chains. Old Candy lay down in the hay and covered his eyes with his arm. The deep green pool of the Salinas River was still in the late afternoon. Already the sun had left the valley to go climbing up the slopes of the Gabilon Mountains, and the hilltops were rosy in the sun. But by the pool, among the mottled sycamores, a pleasant shade had fallen. A water snake glided smoothly up the pool, twisting its periscope head from side to side, and it swam the length of the pool and came to the legs of a motionless heron that stood in the shallows. A silent head and beak glanced down and plucked it out by the head. and the beak swallowed the little snake while its tail waved frantically. A far rush of wind sounded, and a gust drove through the tops of the trees like a wave. The sycamore leaves turned up their silver sides, the brown, dry leaves on the ground scudded a few feet, and row on row of tiny wind waves flowed up the pool's green surface. As quickly as it had come, the wind died, and the clearing was quiet again. The heron stood in the shallows, motionless and waiting. Another little water snake swam up the pool, turning its periscope head from side to side. Suddenly Lenny appeared out of the brush, and he came as silently as a creeping bear moves. The heron pounded the air with its wings, jacked itself clear of the water, and flew off downriver. The little snake slid in among the reeds at the pool's side. Lenny came quietly to the pool's edge. He knelt down and drank, barely touching his lips to the water. When a little bird skittered over the dry leaves behind him, his head jerked up, and he strained toward the sound with eyes and ears until he saw the bird, and then he dropped his head and drank again. When he finished, he sat down on the bank, with his side to the pool so that he could watch the trail's entrance. He embraced his knees and laid his chin down on his knees. The light climbed on out of the valley, and as it went, the tops of the mountains seemed to blaze with increasing brightness. Lenny said softly,
"I didn't forget, you bet. Goddamn. Hide in the brush and wait for George."
He pulled his hat down low over his eyes.
"George gonna give me hell," he said. "George gonna wish he was alone and not have me bothering him."
He turned his head and looked at the bright mountaintops.
"I can go right off there and find a cave,"
he said. And he continued sadly,
"and never have no ketchup. But I won't care. If George don't want me, I'll go away. I'll go away."
And then from out of Lenny's head, there came a little fat old woman. She wore thick bullseye glasses, and she wore a huge gingham apron with pockets, and she was starched and clean. She stood in front of Lenny and put her hands on her hips, and she frowned disapprovingly at him. And when she spoke, it was in Lenny's voice.
"I told you and told you," she said. "I told you mind George because he's such a nice fella and good to you, but you don't never take no care. You do bad things."
And then Lenny answered her.
"I tried, Aunt Clara, ma'am. I tried and tried. I couldn't help it. You never give a thought to George,"
she went on in Lenny's voice.
"He been doing nice things for you all the time. When he got a piece of pie, you always got half or more than half. And if there was any ketchup, why, he'd give it all to you."
"I know," said Lenny miserably. "I tried, Aunt Clara, ma'am. I tried and tried."
She interrupted him.
"All the time, he could have had such a good time if it wasn't for you. He would have took his pay and raised hell in a whorehouse, and he could have sat in a pool room and played snooker, but he got to take care of you."
Lenny moaned with grief.
"I know, Aunt Clara, ma'am. I'll go right off in the hills and find a cave, and I'll live there so I won't be no more trouble to George."
"You just say that," she said sharply.
"You're always saying that. And you know, son of a bitchin' well, you ain't never gonna do it. You'll just stick around and stew the bejesus out of George all the time."
Lenny said,
"I might just as well go away. George ain't gonna let me tend no rabbits now."
Aunt Clara was gone. And from out of Lenny's head, there came a gigantic rabbit. It sat on its haunches in front of him, and it waggled its ears and crinkled its nose at him. And it spoke in Lenny's voice, too.
"Ten rabbits," it said scornfully. "You crazy bastard. You ain't fit to lick the boots of no rabbit. You'd forget 'em and let 'em go hungry. That's what you'd do. And then what would George think?"
"I would not forget,"
Lenny said loudly.
"The hell you wouldn't," said the rabbit. "You ain't worth a greased jackpin to ram you into hell."
Christ knows George done everything he could to